Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Call yourself timekeepers, yet you would turn your back when the future of all sentient life is threatened.
Even if a crystal is revealed to you, even if it provides you with the answers you seek, you are not strong enough to accept them.
I'm only asking for a chance to prove it.
They enter with conviction, always. They leave broken. Always.
I'm not leaving here without that crystal.
Time will tell.
Okay. I propose we just go ahead and start the podcast.
Star Trek.
Yeah, well, not just Star Trek. It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
I know what it is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, It's Got Star Trek.
Oh, I see.
Episode 250.
Whoa, you got it right.
Well, you got it right.
It wasn't that difficult to remember that one. That's a good round number.
Yeah, but the last 3 weeks, I kept saying 100 and whatever.
Is yeah,
149.
Sesquicentennial.
Oh, yeah.
And you kept falling apart.
that is a fair approximation 150? Of what I was doing.
So what are we doing here?
Okay. All right. We're off to a glorious start here. Mm-hmm. Who has an Olympic fever? Anybody have Olympic fever? Nobody?
That's right. I forgot.
All right. Probably not many people.
Is that today?
They started today.
The opening ceremonies were when we're recording.
Yes.
All right. Well, Olympics. That's places us. Even though these are evergreen episodes, that will temporally align. Yeah,
we won't tell you which
Olympics. It'll recording give people time. Context.
Precisely. Context is for kings.
That's what I'm saying.
As they say. All right, we don't have Olympic fever, but we do have Jesse fever.
Hey!
Because we've always got this one Jesse hanging around, and we're like, hey.
Hey!
You want to be even better than one Jesse?
What?
What if we got a...
What
if we got another Jesse to join?
Double down on the espresso, kid.
That's right. So we are joined this evening by Jesse from the Open Pike Night podcast. Welcome, Jesse.
Thank you. I don't think this will be confusing at all for anyone.
No.
Yeah.
Have we thought of like how we're going to refer to one another? Is it going to be like J1 and J Alpha or something like that?
No, I mean, I thought about that. I thought about that, and then I thought, you know, it's funnier if we don't.
Yeah. Just be kind of like a what?
Sort of the comical, you know. Confusion.
Hey, bamboo boy.
It'll be an audio free for all.
What is that?
Yeah. It will.
What was that supposed to mean? Anyway?
Jesse, most people are, of course, going to be aware of the Open Pike Night podcast and who you are. But for those like two or three strange people who don't, would you like to provide a brief description?
Synopsis.
An ad. An advert. Some sort of compelling summary that would entice people who don't know about the Open Pike Night podcast, because everyone who knows about it listens to it regularly. But the people who don't know about it, they might want to come and get in on the action. So what would you say about the Open Pike Night podcast to get people to listen?
Well, I really wish that I had prepared something, but I guess, let's see, off the top of my head, Open Pike Night is the Strange New Worlds podcast where your personal logs are the prime directive. We are a call-in show. We mostly cover Strange New Worlds, as I just mentioned, and we interview the creators and the cast and everybody behind the scenes of the show, and we have people call in like an old-timey radio show so that they can get their questions about the show, specific episodes, acting processes, all those sorts of things, answered directly from the source. Started as just kind of a, hey, you green shirt guys, I'd love to do a podcast with you. And Cameron suggested, what if we did a Star Trek show that hadn't been off the air for 30 years? So we went after Strange New Worlds and we figured, all right, we'll do 10 episodes and then we'll call it good. It'll be a lot of fun. But then we started getting interviews and
I remember
we had not anticipated that at all. So we're like, well, let's just keep going, you guys.
Serious interviews.
Yeah.
I think now we're like 75 episodes in and it's like, it's so much fun. That's most of the reason that we do it is because of how much fun it is.
And you guys have you've been doing us on Patreon, just doing some discovery and a few other things here and there, right? On so you guys,
yeah,
some
we
extra
did
stuff too.
Lower Decks and Discovery, primarily because we felt semi obligated because we received screeners for those, which we did not ask for. We were like, oh, there must just be a list for Star Trek people. So we got those and we're like, let's do something with them. So yeah, those are on our Patreon, which you can join for as little as $2 a month.
They beat us. I think we only have one tier, $3 a month on our tier. Currently $3. If you're listening to the future and the price has gone up, tough luck. Yeah, that's just
inflation. Get over it.
That's the
but
way
we
the
need
world
to become
goes.
More competitive with our pricing. I think
what you to drive the price down.
Yeah,
right. We'll have a $1 tier.
Yeah,
we were thinking of we don't know what it is going to be yet, but we came up with a title for it one of our for Patreon feature, which would be, what was it called? Dan's Special Treats.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, we came up with the title. We don't know what it's about.
A bit ago, yeah.
It's going to be called Dan's Special Treats, episode one. We have to come up with the actual what those treats are, or let Dan do it.
I'm already interested in that, but I can't come to a podcast that I love like it's got Star Trek. I literally listen to you guys every week, frequently more than once per episode. And
thank you.
If Dan is going to do a segment that's just him, you should probably call it Only Dan's, right?
Oh, yeah. Only Dan's. You know, like OnlyFans?
Oh, hey. I'm slow. It took me a minute. Only Dan's? Is that a reference?
I mean,
I'm slow.
He's already completely nude. spends most of the time completely nude.
I did notice that. I didn't know before I got here that you guys recorded in the nude, but it's fine. Yeah, it's okay.
It's like, what was that song, Eternal Flame, was that the Bengals? Or who sang that?
What are you talking about?
Eternal
Somebody
flame.
Like that.
Yeah, I know the song, but
apparently she recorded it in the nude.
Oh, okay. I was wondering why.
I'm gonna like look. Why
you brought that up. Look that one up.
I'm gonna look that up because I can't believe it.
All right, you look that up. I'll let folks know that. They should go check out Open Mike Night. It's
Eternal
fantastic.
Eternal Flame. Flang. Flange. It's Eternal Flame by the Bengals on their first third studio album.
Third studio album.
Everything in 1988.
All right. Thank you. That was it. I enjoy that bit of trivia. Mm-hmm. Another bit of trivia is that folks who want to check out our Patreon,
you can't tell that she's naked.
They can go to patreon.com/itsgotstartrek.
As I said, you have my support.
Super easy. All right. Well, thanks again, Jesse, for joining us this week. And we asked,
I was right.
That took me
it's
a
more
second.
Fun this way.
Because see, you know, Jesse, when I thank Jesse for being here, our Jesse said thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're welcome, which is even funnier. Okay.
See? It's gonna be a barrel of laughs.
Watch it.
It's working out well so far.
An enemy we will only defeat by striking first.
We did the Patreon. We welcome Jesse. So we're all good there. Any news-em-ups? Does anybody have any news-em-ups? I don't have any news-em-ups.
Tree branch fell in my car.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that sucks.
Everyone's okay, though. I just got a foot-long dent above my wheel well.
Right, yeah.
But it's the aggravating kind of dent where it doesn't actually damage the... It doesn't stop the car from functioning.
It's not like you were sitting in the car and the tree branch came down out of the sky.
No, I walked out my front yard. But yeah, like Patrick said, it's not like... It doesn't actually cause any driving issues, and it's not big enough to be horrific.
Was there like a bolt of lightning that was like... And like
I don't know. I didn't hear it. It just
it was probably
up.
Just the wind. Yeah.
It wasn't that windy. I think it was just maybe the tree is dying or something, which is unfortunate. Point being
dead
is
tree.
That
you got to do something about that.
Is that it? The dent is not big enough to be horrific, but it's also like you know, it's there. It's big enough to be seen. So I feel like I should do something, but I don't fully care. But it's like that in-between fence walking, sort of like, do I want to do it? Do I want to know it? I don't know. It's sort of like living in limbo.
Because somebody's going to be like, hey, you got a dent in your
wheel. Yeah, I know. And some guy's going to be like, I can fix that for you for $100.
Oh, yeah. No, you're going to get that every single day.
I know.
Until you fix it.
I remember that.
It's going to be some like old dude. He's like, you got a dent in your wheel.
Yeah. I that happened to me.
You're missing your hubcap.
An older car I had a dent in it, and I would get that like every day, and like the spiel was always the same. So eventually, I was just like, "No, thank you." And some guy was like, "You don't gotta be rude and interrupt me." I was like, "I wasn't trying to be rude. I said no, thank you. I just am trying to do stuff, and I don't want to sit here for a minute to like argue with you about why I don't want this service." Anyway,
wow. All right.
I think everyone has a right to make money in what whatever way works with them.
Perhaps,
but don't get mad at me when I don't want to accept your services.
All right. So that that sort of anecdote is helps endear us to the audience.
I know, right? I was just like complaining about like things that don't matter.
It's like we are just like you. We also have God send messages in the night that He's displeased with us by mildly inconveniencing us.
Yeah, I know. In the end, it's not a real... They're not real. These are not real problems, I know.
Well, I mean, it's a real problem. There's nothing wrong with complaining about that. Okay. So we haven't even mentioned what we're going to be talking about this week because we asked guest Jesse, what he would like to discuss this week. Mm-hmm. And he suggested Star Trek Discoveries Through the Valley of Shadows, right? Shadows. Through the Valley of Shadows.
Yes, that is it.
Yes.
That's what I have written down here, but then I suddenly stopped trusting myself.
Season two, towards the end of season two.
Yeah, season two, episode 12.
Don't screw it up.
And we'll get right into that.
Right before a two-parter.
We'll get into that.
Ultimate episode.
Shortly. We'll get into that soon. But
would
first...
Would this be the penultimate episode?
No, I...
Because the next episode is a two-parter finale. Yeah.
But it's an anti-penultimate.
Yeah.
Anti-penultimate.
It's two-part, they have different names.
You count the two parts?
Yeah, because they say part one and part two.
But that's the whole argument is whether to make two-parters one episode or not.
But it depends how they name it, because sometimes they say part one, part two. Sometimes they use the
Isn't it part one? I think it is part one,
and then a two. And then sometimes they give it a different name.
That's what I'm saying. It's part one, part two.
It is part one, part two, but I don't know because since they don't air on TV anymore, it used to be you went by how they aired it on TV, like Encounter at Farpoint or Emissary was aired as a
That's
as
true.
A whole business. Anyway.
I was just
two truths are possible.
Yes. The streaming era has robbed us of a data point.
Mm-hmm. Data points.
It's robbed us of a lot, if we're being honest.
it really has.
Because I just watched a bunch of those. I just watched that season in a binge, I think.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, we'll get to that soon. But first, we don't have any news 'em ups, but we do have Dan had a news 'em up, but we're done with that.
It
was a relate 'em up.
That was
relate 'em up.
A wine 'em up.
We'll show you how.
Wine 'em up.
Jesus.
No,
I prefer to call it a wine arena.
I mean, I wasn't.
You were a little bit. What I'm trying to say is
Suburban
that we have, that's right, Suburban Mumps.
No,
we have a voicemail from Isaac, from the other side of this crazy ass planet.
Mm-hmm.
He's down there in Tasmania, fighting the good fight.
Yes,
down in Tasmania,
keeping up the defenses down there in Tasmania. And this week, for technical reasons, Dan will be playing the voicemail.
The role of voicemail playing will be played by me.
Tech 'em ups.
Hey guys, it's Isaac from Tasmania here, congratulating you on 250 episodes of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. I hope that you have another 250 in you, 250,000 more like
oh,
it.
Oh no.
I listened to your Patreon channel and you did an episode on library jokes, but you didn't tell the best library joke. So I've got that one for you now, guys. I have told this on the Open Pike Night podcast.
Oh, crap.
No.
You stopped it. You son of a bitch.
Oh, because I forgot that the sound was playing and that if I do shit while the sound's playing, it stops it.
That's actually the punchline to the library joke. Okay. So.
Sabotage.
It worked really well.
This is the first time Dan has had to play the voicemails. Sorry. Normally, I play the voicemails.
Oh.
But for reasons that you don't need to know
There was
about.
Something in the background like a dinosaur.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you hear the fucking pterodactyls behind Isaac? You just play from the beginning, Dan, because I want to hear the pterodactyls again.
Okay, my bad. My mistake.
No worries. It's muscle memory. We understand.
Hey, guys. It's Isaac from Tasmania here, congratulating you on 250 episodes of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. I hope that you have another 250 in you. 250,000 more like it.
Isaac!
I like that, yeah.
I listened to your Patreon channel, did an episode on library jokes, but you didn't tell the best library joke, so I've got that one for you now, guys. Sure. I have told this on the Open Pike Night podcast, so I'm a little bit embarrassed that Jesse has to sit through it again. And by Jesse, I mean Jesse and not Jesse. I hope that makes sense.
Clearly,
but anyway, guy walks into a library and says to the librarian, "Can I have some fish and chips, please?" And the librarian says, "No, mate, this is a library." And the guy replies, "Oh, I am sorry. can I have some fish and chips, please? That is A-grade quality humor.
Absolutely.
That is perfect. Now, Jesse, just to let you know, Jesse, Patrick, and Dan are certified dinguses. You are now a dingus too, but that's better than being a wiener. So congratulations on that. That is something that is just official. Now, I've got a poem for you guys.
A poem?
Roses are
Somebody's
red.
Somebody's screaming back there now.
Don't lose it now, Isaac. You've only got 14 seconds left. Roses are red. Poems are for crying. I hope that Dan now presses the button labeled Chief O'Brien.
Chief O'Brien?
Excellent.
Nice.
Well done.
With the internet.
Was that this episode?
Yeah, there was actually two laughs. I cut out a middle part of someone talking and then stuck the two ends together. Right.
Thank you, Isaac. That was a
for real.
Great voicemail.
Thank you, Saru.
The joke was good.
Yeah, I'm going to tell that one.
I remember hearing that. I recall, I think, hearing that on Open Pike Night a while back.
I'm a little upset that he's just
recycling
jokes. Well, sharing the material that used to be exclusive to our show, but
and
I get it.
Just cheapens it a little bit.
I think we're gonna find if we keep listening through our playlists that Isaac's making the rounds, and he's probably telling that joke on each and every Star Trek podcast he can get his grubby little Tasmanian hands on.
Oh, no.
I appreciated this gag.
I've only lost 6 hours.
Felt like 6 years.
No, very good. Excellent. And thank you again. Yes, 250 episodes, pretty cool. The hundreds are the ones where you're like, oh, we should do some special celebration, but
well, we're getting there.
But this is like one quarter to 1,000.
Well, I think this is still pretty special because we got Jesse joining us.
Of course.
As well as Jesse. Both Jessies.
Very, very special.
Jesse squared. So that's it's extra awesome. Square. It's more awesome than a regular old episode.
What are we gonna do a third of the way through the 333rd podcast?
Oh.
What do you mean? A third of the way through what? A third of the way through 1,000?
Third of the way through episode 333.
Well, that have to be a 333.333.
I'm confused. Wait, what are we going to do for episode 333?
Okay, let's say
when you get to the 333rd episode and you're a third of the way through it, what will you do there?
It's approximately 30 minutes in.
Okay, approximately.
Oh, damn.
I don't know, Dan. We might just have to ruminate
on
that.
We better start thinking now.
For the next 83 episode. We got 83 episodes until we got to do that, right?
Mr. Math over there.
Mr. Math.
Usually it's you that's Mr.
Dan's Math. Dan's Mr. Math. Mm-hmm. I'm Mr. Words.
I will be the purest form of conscious life in all of existence.
All right.
Wow.
I will be asking later why the fuck he started talking weird. But anyway, we'll get to that in a second.
Because he'd been made.
So thank you, Isaac. I think that's it for voicemails and all that other stuff. Other folks out there, if you'd like to send us a voicemail, you can either go to itsgotstartrek.com/record and you can just, the app will record it for you, or you can send an MP3 or whatever audio file suits your fancy to feedback@itsgotstartrek.com.
Two truths are possible.
That's one of those old-fashioned email addresses. And they still work pretty well for, a lot of things, but they're asynchronous, That's the thing about email. It's asynchronous.
Asynchronous. Yeah. I mean, I guess technically, WhatsApp or chatty chats or texty texts, they could be considered asynchronous depending upon the availability of the
person
you're talking to.
They're flexible. They're like synchronous.
Auto antonym, is that what they were talking about?
Autoerotic asynchronicity.
I don't think we're talking about anything anymore.
Schenectady, New York.
Like sanction. That's what I would use.
17 minutes.
I like that word game, actually. That was the kind of word game that would really stress me out.
Yeah, it just seemed
Seriously. Know?
Like it's fun to watch somebody else. You're like, oh, that's clever. But if it was my turn, I'd just shit my pants. I'd be like, no, I don't want to do it.
Well, it reminded me, there was a Simpsons episode where like Lisa went to like the smart kid's house, and Lisa is known to be really smart.
And then they
were like all playing the antonym game where you had to rearrange the letters of someone's name or something.
That wasn't the antonym game. That was
anagram.
Yes,
anagram. Antonym.
The antonym game would be a little
opposite.
Easier.
Yeah, that'd be much
Although
easier.
Although we would argue because somebody would be like, well, the opposite of love is actually
indifference.
Indifference.
Yeah.
Which I mean, I agree with. I'm not trying to speak in a mocking term, you could see how somebody might argue that actually it's not.
So, anyways, in the episode,
anywho,
the anagram, you rearrange someone's letters of someone's name to form a new sentence or whatever, or whatever, or whatever. And then, and that's what it reminded me of. Right. Because it's a really difficult, nerdy game that like seems like a lot of fun.
Yeah, remind him ups.
That I'd never be able to play.
Okay.
I'm not good at Trivial Pursuit either.
Okay, well, now we know that. Now I won't ask you to play.
You just have to play a bunch and memorize the answers.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah. And play an old version from like 1985.
Yeah, play the original one. I know all this.
The Genius Edition.
I'll beat you.
Okay.
That's something we both struggle with, isn't it?
What we do struggle with sometimes on the It's Got Star Trek podcast is talking about Star Trek. So
choke on that.
So I love Sassy Linus.
I know.
Oh, me too. And I liked when he slurped up his little lettuce or whatever.
No, I think it's
really enjoyed that
because Reno said,
"Hey, bamboo boy."
She said, "Bam." So, like, I think it must have been
was
bamboo.
Was he eating bamboo? Is that the deal?
Because I don't know why else she would have said bamboo boy.
Just to be hateful.
Maybe we should
just to be hateful. hateful Reno.
Did she ever mention like Bam Bam Bigelow?
No, I don't think she ever. I don't think they have Bam Bam Bigelow.
What about Bam Bam, the Barney Rubble's son?
No,
I don't think
Bam
they know
Bam.
Who that is.
No, like the internet, they don't have those things in Star Trek.
Oh, because they don't have the internet, so they had those things.
I'm just saying, they just don't know about.
It's among the list of things they don't have in Star Trek. They don't have internet, they don't have Bam Bam Bigelow, and they don't have a Bam Bam Barney's son.
I bet that Kovich guy knows about him.
But that Boothby was my favorite Martian, wasn't he?
Boothby knows about him.
The fellow who played Boothby?
Yeah, I think so.
I think he was my favorite Martian.
What is it?
I don't know. It's all before my time.
Ray Walston.
Oh, yes, Ray Walston. He was good. Okay. Anyway, you guys have successfully distracted me. I'm trying. We're trying.
Star
trying,
Trek.
Trying to
you talk, are angry.
Not just Star Trek. We're trying to specifically talk about Through
Star
the
Trek
Valley
Discovery.
Of Shadows.
So
we
pain.
Have now established the episode.
First of all, we should note that we've covered all of seasons 3 through 5 of Discovery, you know, as they aired, but we've only covered sporadic episodes.
We've done one season
of the first couple seasons.
Well, we did. Two.
No, we've done four episodes in the first season.
Yeah, four episodes. Yeah, but
and now 2 episodes in the second season.
Yeah,
I don't think that's possible.
We've done one season two so.
Because we did the first 3 episodes for our pilot series.
Yeah, and then the other one with mud.
Anyway, the long and the short of it is, because the story is so serialized, we tend to sort of veer away from it so we can just jump in and out into more episodic television. But we love Discovery, so when Jesse suggested doing it, it was a great opportunity to come back and talk about one of these episodes from the second season. However, it was really funny because the episode, of course, opens with the... with the previously on Star Trek Discovery.
Oh,
and I'm like,
yeah.
I was like, I've seen this season a couple times. I'm confused as to what's going on.
This may actually be the most exposition heavy season of Discovery ever, which is, I mean, saying a lot, right? Yeah. Like, I love Discovery as well, but man, usually they're pretty economical with their exposition and Discovery. But yeah, that previously on was like,
it's a
wow. They just so many things.
So yeah, it was Burnham's mom is the Red Angel. That was starting to come back to me.
Oh no, no. But is she or not?
Is she or not? And then like Burnham was like, I accidentally stopped my mom from doing it. Then Amanda Grayson is like, no, you did the opposite. You didn't stop her. You helped her or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
What was the line? It was. I'm gonna find it.
Well, and then of course you have all the Clem Fandango stuff going on in the background because he's got a beard now.
And they have this massive green herring, which I'm using because it really feels like they're setting up a Borg origin.
Yes.
They show you these green nanoprobes in Leland's blood, and then he says, like, just struggle is useless.
Yeah.
And then it is not a Borg thing.
I remember at the time, we weren't doing the podcast at the time, but when that aired, all the chat, you know, and not just that episode, you know, the episodes leading up, it was like, this has got to be Borg origin or Borg related in some fashion. Especially when all the time travel stuff, it was like, oh, okay, they're going to go, Control will go back in time and like create the Borg, and then the Borg will, you know, that sort of thing.
Side note, do you remember when Tenavik? Is it Tenavik or Tenavik? Tenavik?
Yes, it is either of those.
I think it's...
like whichever you're
from. Two truths are possible.
I'm gonna say Tenavik. I had to keep writing that down. I could never remember. Usually when I hear the name once or twice, I'm like, okay, got it, and then I write it down. Remember in my notes, I kept having to re-look up his name because I could never. It was like Tarevik, Tavarek.
Well, and
like,
this is not a situation where like Shatner just decides to pronounce it differently than everybody else. So
it's not one of those situations. Yeah. It was just for whatever reason my brain was not remembering that name.
Do you have name reason. Blindness?
No. No, not
or
usually.
Name deafness?
Were you watching it with the subtitles?
I was. Yeah, for the second run through, I always watch subtitles in the second run through.
So you do first run through, no subtitles. Yeah. Second run through, watched it subtitles.
Once. Uh-huh.
And Tenevic played by
Kenneth Mitchell.
Kenneth Mitchell, who the USS Mitchell is yes. named after season 5 of Discovery. Yeah. Like, oh, he was also like the
bunch of
Osiris evil scientist buddy, right?
Yeah,
for
a while.
He was Aurelio. Aurelio. Before that, he was Cole, and then Cole's father, Cole Shar or Cole Shear.
I'm not joking, Lee.
That guy?
No. Not Gary Mitchell. No. Kenneth Mitchell. Gary Mitchell's a character, Dan.
Oh, I'm
Kenneth Mitchell is a real life man who recently died of ALS.
Oh.
But he also did a number of voices on, he did 3 or 4 characters on Lower Decks. And by all accounts, a great guy. He was diagnosed with ALS while filming Discovery. I think it was maybe even this season. And unfortunately, it progressed pretty rapidly. But what was great is they created the character of Aurelio for him specifically, and that it would accommodate him being in a chair and not having to walk around because he was having trouble doing that.
Well, what I was saying about Tenevic is that like he was able to like pull that time crystal apart when he ripped it right out. Now, do you think that was Klingon strength, or do you think time crystals are just brittle? There's no way for us to know.
Not sure. Yeah.
And
that segues
into my next question about Klingons in this episode. Those were some calm Klingons. They were almost Vulcan-like. Yeah, like the monk Klingons.
Cleric class Klingons. Jesse, guest.
We're dangerous.
Guest Jesse, you're into the time crystal business, right? What are your thoughts on the time crystal stuff?
I really am, and I appreciate that you have picked that up.
Yeah.
Mostly, I think what I love about it is that it's basically the flux capacitor.
Yeah, right? Like, what makes time travel possible?
Right, and you know that because it's called a time crystal. So, like, they don't need to explain how it works. They don't need to explain anything specific about it. As soon as you say time crystal, it's like, oh, okay, so time stuff. Like, and Discovery uses it for whatever time stuff they want. And so does Strange New Worlds, which I really, really appreciate. And I think that for me, it's almost a cheat code and like a wink from the writers. I'm in love with it. The audacity to just say, okay, now there are time crystals.
Yeah.
So that's what the story is. Like, I'm totally here for that.
The Discovery is now in possession of a raw time crystal.
We might be getting our hands on some raw time crystal.
Raw
time crystals.
Raw
and wriggling.
Time will tell.
The thing about this,
he had that voice too. Tenevic and Computer Gant had those weird voices.
Well, Tenevic was just more deep Klingon.
So this
voice.
Is
not jangly robot.
Right.
Voice.
Okay. So this is Tenevic.
Time will tell.
Right. And then what was the other one with Gant?
I don't know.
Oh,
you're the one who's clicking the buttons.
That's your.
Oh, it's this one.
I will be the purest form of conscious life in all of existence.
Time will tell.
I just noticed that. It's kind of similar.
I hear the similarity, although I think there's a different.
Oh
vibe.
Yeah, there is. There's a little
vibe going.
A little bit. Sounds more like that than like, you know, Data or something.
Yeah. No. With the time crystal thing, what's funny in this? It's acute in this episode because
like a meat cute.
No, it's an acute representation of a not conflict. There's a sort of a dissonance between the two stories that are going along, because the time crystal story, as Jesse was saying, is just this, like, it's a MacGuffin-y, like, time crystals and it's magic. And oh, by the way, like, if you take it, then your future's your future.
That's true.
It doesn't make any sense to say that,
but we're gonna do that because time crystals are dramatically awesome.
Captain Pike looked more bad.
I made that a note, actually. It's like that time he was like, yeah, if you take the time crystal, you can't go back, and now your future's sealed. It's like, why?
But compare that to the other story, which is this super convoluted, like, nanites and control and the Section 31. And, you know,
Section 31
like,
was thrown in
you're
there.
You're like, I have no idea what's going on there. I'm interested. The actors are all, like, saying their lines, like, all in an engaging fashion, but I'm sort of confused as to what's going on. I mean, partly because, you know, I haven't actually watched the rest of the season for probably a year and a half.
Spock was talking about nanobots containing ferromagnetic materials.
Yeah, and then they're using like all that stuff. But it was just funny when you put the two stories together, and it's this mythic, everything's just mythic, like just believe it because we're making a point here, we're telling a tale. And then there's this whole other, like, you got to follow every single fucking detail about the signals and the Red Angel.
And the signal thing, I was thinking that, I also didn't think about this until just now. There were seven signals that they had to follow.
Yes.
That's kind of like in parallel to the last season of Discovery, where they had, instead of signals, they had clues.
The fourth season where it was sort of, you know, they had to like hop around to certain places. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was very video gamey. We are just about up on a break. Dan, do you have something clever to play? Sometimes you like clicking something. Sometimes you're like, let me click this button while we go into break.
You got to have a time quote or something, right?
Yeah, do you have a quote about like time? About like how it's time to take a break?
The power to manipulate time is a weapon unlike any other.
All right.
That doesn't really have anything to do with breaks.
If that's what we have to go out with, we could do that.
I apologize for the interruption, but the captain needs us.
How about that?
No.
The captain needs us, so we got to take a break.
All right.
I apologize for the interruption, but the captain needs us.
Did they make any reference to peeing or pooing or taking a drink?
I doubt it.
Peeing or pooing?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
What about the cappuccino one? What about the Jet Reno cappuccino one? How about that?
I'm not sure about
that. Came back from the dead and his name rhymes with poo.
Oh, that's right.
That'll work.
Nice.
Oh, wait, are you talking? Or wait, are you talking about?
Double down on the espresso, kid.
Is that what you're talking about?
Okay, well. Audience at home, pick one of those and laugh at that.
Yeah, I know we announced each one. Instead of like timing it right, no, we just like gave you a selection for you to decide which one you want.
Use your home time crystal kit and just pick the one that works the best. I don't know that any of them quite work. But anyway, just pick the one that works the best. We will be right back.
He came back from the dead and his name rhymes with poo.
All right, we're back.
Back.
All right, that was just a sort of an environmental sound effect. Thanks, Dan. You have any more of those?
All right, okay.
Yeah. I love Discovery Klingons. I know that it was a point of contention among the fandom. I think especially in season two, once they had their hair back, you know, it was like,
I'm
here for this. They're Klingons. Yeah. They sound like Klingons. Tenevic is like the Klingon with the clearest enunciation,
yes.
I think, maybe in the history of Discovery,
yes,
which I really liked. And it makes sense because he's the one like explaining everything. The Pillar of the Present is inscribed with Klingon runes that translate to hindsight is 2020.
Yes.
Which I thought
the Pillar of the Present.
Do you have what it said? You probably don't have what it said. The weird little thing, the phrase that Jesse was referring to, because I remember listening to that, because you're right. It is hindsight is 2020. But I remember pausing it and my brain being like, how the fuck do I parse this?
Oh, wait. I put a few of these things.
Is this one of those ones where you do it in a random order and we're supposed to guess?
No. This is just going to be an order.
I kind of like that, by the way.
It is funny because I don't actually know remember the order. I just put them in the order that I like the best. But that was the new game last week that we did where I guessed the order. As it appeared in the episode.
You chopped the lines up and then just rearranged them.
Yeah, and then
really enjoyed that.
Yeah, well, I'll remember that for the future.
All right, well, play whatever this business is.
Okay, so this will be a few sounds.
The present is a veil between anticipation and horror. Lift the veil, and madness may follow.
All right. So that's not what I was referring to, but I do like that. No, I'm just saying that's not the line I was thinking about.
but
I love that line
because
it freaked me the fuck out.
Okay.
It's a scary thing to say to a motherfucker.
It is.
The past, the present, the future are all equal in their presence. They enter with conviction, always.
Oh, wait, that wasn't the right
one. They leave broken, always. When the future becomes the past.
Yeah.
The present will be unlocked.
Yeah,
that's the one.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. I liked it. I was like, huh?
Yeah.
Do I need to smoke more marijuana to understand this? It's like, what's going on here?
You have traveled far for nothing.
But the acting is so good. And by the way, I took issue with that because, I mean, maybe he doesn't know, but they got a spore drive, so they didn't really travel that far at all.
It wasn't all that bad.
Yeah. I mean, this is not new to Star Trek where you're like, man, they're just like bouncing around wherever the fuck they need to be. They're right there. But I really like the delivery by Kenneth Mitchell. The Tenevic's lines were just interesting. It was like really engaging. It was an engaging character.
I kind of like dug the reimagining of the Klingons too. I mean, like whether or not they're stray too far from original Klingons, just looking at their design itself, I really I didn't mind it.
Enjoy how they speak.
I enjoyed it. But it was interesting.
Well, like the Tulampur and all
yeah.
that.
Tulampur. Yeah.
Gaelish.
Gaelish.
And Dorian Napoo. Not Kumlu.
And I mentioned this before. It seems like in the last couple seasons of Discovery, they like tried to like distance themselves from Klingons as far as they could.
Zero Klingons.
They mentioned them like a couple really times, but we never saw them again. And that was probably, I'm guessing that was done on purpose.
And even the mentions were minimal mentions, sort of like oblique, like, that's Klingon territory or something like that.
I mean, Discovery is dealing with a lot of, shall we call it, negative attention from certain quarters of the internet at all times anyway. Mm-hmm. So I could see them being like, you know what, let's just cut one of these off at the knees at least.
Mm-hmm. There's plenty of other characters to play around with.
Do you think they went to the future in later seasons? Because like, I think originally a lot of people were speculating that the newer Star Trek, when Discovery was going to be new at the time, they were like, oh, maybe it'll take place in the future. And then some people on the internet like expressed dissatisfaction that it was going to be like an earlier Federation Starfleet thing. Now they went to the future. I'm wondering if that's in response to fans like wanting a future Star Trek. I don't know. Guess we'll never know.
Well, I mean, you know, also there were a lot of complaints. So, you know, in a couple episodes here, they're like, okay, fuck you. We're going to the future where we can just all do all this new stuff. You know, and I know, you know, people have different opinions on the stuff going on in the future, but I thought it was fun, you know, and a fun challenge for the writers as well as opening up a lot of avenues for them because, you know, they could sort of free themselves from a lot of the lore. And it had been a while since I'd gone back to see any of seasons one or two. So having been in that 32nd century time frame for so long, it was a little jarring coming back in time and watching this episode, but it was also really, it was really cool too.
I love that we can see so much of Anson Mount's Pike that we end up with in Strange New Worlds and so much of Ethan Speck's Spock that we end up with in Strange New Worlds being built here. Like, it's mostly already established. I mean, if I'm being honest, Pike's hair is a little too small.
Yeah, it's a little flat. It's a little bit sad.
Yes.
Kind of upsetting. And I don't think he quite has the Marvel physique.
Yeah, he hasn't puffed out his chest yet.
We will not have this conversation in the presence of Captain Pike.
He didn't start working out until after he saw his future being turned into a horrific monster.
you can see where.
Oh my god!
You can see where they would look at these performances and go, "Hey guys, I think we can build a show around this." Like, Pike's face when he is watching Klingon mom and dad fight at the table is so expressive. And he's like, you can see him like just wanting to jump in and eventually, I'll go. It's okay.
It's hilarious. And I mean, he's so charming. I mean, it does jump off the screen. But I think the other thing that works is that Anson Mount, he's such a presence, but at the same time, he's not like, he doesn't steal the attention away from everybody, right? Like the other characters in the scene. Yeah, it's everyone's benefiting it from it all together. And he's just doing his part. And then you get to see him in all these interesting situations, particularly in this episode where when he goes to Boreth and first of all, you see the little CGI guy walking up. I don't know if you noticed, it's very subtle.
I was wondering, that's supposed to be Pike.
It's Pike walking up, and it's funny because we think of modern Star Trek as having really good CGI, and most of it is, and most of it in that shot was, except for this like weird, it looked like an Enterprise-era CGI Suliban character, like so awkwardly shambling up these stairs.
And his head, his hood was down while he's going up, but when he knocked on the door, his hood was up. Oh, I don't know if that's a continuity error, but I would think that if
or a continuity error,
or it could be a continuity error. You're very much right.
I don't think it could be.
Or a continuity error. It would be a Conway Twitty error. No,
Conway Twitty.
Ladies and gentlemen, Conway Twitty.
There was an interesting fade into that scene. It was a close up of Saru's face. It's like scraggly nooks and cranny face. And it blended into the crackly rocks.
Like an English muffin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and it blended in with rocks, which was like a blend between what, Mordor and Mines of Moria or something like that.
Yeah, it was
like kind of like both of those, because it was fiery like Mordor, but it had...
They call it a mine.
But then they had like bridges and rock things everywhere, like the mines. It had a lot of...
And
some Lotor vibes.
They had that... Yeah. And they had that second fade where like... Pike reaches for the door,
yes,
and then it fades to the rest of the same shot.
Yeah.
And I was weird. Like, what is hell? Why would they do that? Oh, it's a time thing.
Yeah.
Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
It's a time thing.
It was clever, but it was weird. And we've been to Boreth before. The Boreth was first seen in TNG's Rightful Heir, which was the episode where they, I guess it's these same clerics, monks, they try to clone Kalish and install him as the leader of the Klingon, you know, on the High Council. And then Worf mentions hanging out at Boreth after the Enterprise D is destroyed in Generations. I think he mentions that. I think it's in the Way of the Warrior in Deep Space Nine. When he first comes on board in Deep Space Nine, he mentions that they were like, O'Brien or somebody's like, what have you been up to? And he was like, I've just been chilling at Boreth.
Did we talked about that?
We did Way of the Warrior. And Jesse, you alluded to this earlier in Strange New Worlds, in Equality of Mercy, the alternate Pike, alternate universe Pike, future alternate universe, sexy old daddy Pike.
A sexy old daddy
Remember
Pike.
Wearing the monster maroon, you know, uniform?
Yep.
He goes to Boreth to get a time crystal to go back in time to tell Pike to, you know, don't avoid getting all messed up in the face, because otherwise everything goes to shit. Remember?
The time crystals.
And it's kind of a retread of the exact arc in this episode, which is like... What if you knew your fate? Would you still accept it? And Pike gives this great little speech to himself. You know, I believe in service and sacrifice and love. Mm-hmm. And you're like, damn right. We love Starfleet. And he accepts his fate. But so many people when Strange New Worlds started were like, I think they're going to change his future. Yeah. They're going to change his fate. And they're like, no, all right, fine. We'll give you a whole episode about how we're still not planning to do that.
And by the way, something that always perplexed me a little bit about that argument or that desire that people have. And there's a lot of arguments like, can you do it and stay within canon? First of all, you can do anything and stay within canon because they're clever writers, but they don't need to because it was already resolved. In the Menagerie, he gets to go back to the planet
and
you know, maybe you might say like, oh, wouldn't it be better just to cure him and then he can go do whatever he wants? But I don't know. And at least in the Menagerie, he seemed to be like totally down to like hang out with the Talosians and do his thing. So he already has a relatively happy ending.
Well, and the future from that point is unwritten.
Yeah.
Like,
true.
Anything could happen to him after the Menagerie, and we just haven't seen that yet. And, you know, I think for people to assume that, like, that's his fate and it's bad is kind of missing the point anyway, where it's like, dude, you know, having your life change in that way doesn't mean you now have no reason for living.
Exactly. and it's there's a sort of a moral message, a citizenship message, but it's also, again, it's that mythological side of the storytelling. You know, sometimes Star Trek's more sci-fi, sometimes it's more like, no, we're telling sort of a grand archetypal tale of some sort, and it's like, yes, accepting your fate in order to do the right thing, right? Because that's what he's doing, right? It's like the choice is, oh, you don't have to have that fate, but if you don't, then all this terrible shit will happen to all these other people.
And the Klingons are all like, damn, dude.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is, Denevik is all like, whoa, that's rad.
Yeah.
Here's the time crystal.
He's a solid dude.
He like crunch, just rips that fucking time crystal right out of that fucking rock.
Time will tell.
Yeah.
Oh, the side note, you mentioned Kalish, and that reminded me
Kalish!
Of... That reminded me of another line
in this episode that you're looking for. You're looking for it in your buttons.
My buttons.
In your array of buttons.
I'm gonna
Danny
play this.
Buttons.
All right.
Symbol of Kalish, namesake of Konos.
He says Konos.
Konos.
But they And I've brought this up in the past, Kronos. that it's spelled like it Kronos, but they always pronounce it Kronos.
Yes, right, I agree. Right. And I prefer Kronos myself.
Sounds Kronos better. Sounds cooler.
I mean, to be honest.
But then it sounds like time.
I gotta tell you, I kind of prefer Kaelas. I prefer Kaelas.
Kaelas!
Because, you know, it used to always be Kaelas. Now it's Kaelas.
I like that Ash Tyler drops it super casually. He's like, oh, yeah, it's a monastery of Kaelish.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like that friend you have that goes to Spain, and when they come back, they're doing that fake lisp, like, right?
Yeah, I was just hanging out in Barcelona.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like, come on, man. You're not from there.
You're talking about Ash Tyler, Shahzad Latif.
Clem Fandango.
Yes, it is really, really hard not to mention or even think about Clem Fandango when he
Clem
comes
H.
on screen.
Fandango.
Yeah, okay, so for people who are unaware, I pity you, but for the people who are unaware,
get educated.
Many of us previously knew Shahzad Latif as the character Clem Fandango, Clem H. Fandango on the television program, the British television program Toast of London, with Matt Berry in the lead. It's one of those shows. It's hilarious.
Humans.
Some of you will not like it. There's plenty of people who will not like it, but for me, it's one of the funniest things I've ever fucking seen.
Dan hasn't made it past the first episode.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm not sure if he's finished the first.
No,
episode.
I mean, I've not declared. I never said that I don't like it. I like Matt Berry.
It's just
and
it's
I like
a little much.
It's much.
You
like,
thought it was a little much.
Yeah. And then I tried to
Which
watch. And I
like
tried
it.
To watch Snuffbox, and that was like.
Oh, Snuffbox is great.
I know they're all great shows. It's just I need to be in. Sometimes I need to be in a certain mood to get.
Snuffbox is definitely
one of these shows.
A little.
Dan, have you watched all of Garth Marenghi's Dark Place at least?
No, but I know of it because these guys talk about it. I know. It's shameful. I need to catch
up
on these
things.
Well,
so the thing about Garth Marenghi is one of those shows where I love it. I can't be mad at people who don't like it.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, I'm going to be like, you know what? That's fine. And it's sort of like it's like a spectrum, because there's some shows where you're like, come on, how could you not like this? It's charming. But like Garth Marenghi is pretty intense.
The first time I heard of Snuffbox, my older brother was watching it, and then like he was watching like an episode. The episode went over, and he just put his hand on his head. He went, ugh. and then he clicked play for the next episode.
Yes, because it's great. I remember.
I was like, "What is this show you're torturing yourself?"
Jesse and I were hanging out, and I was like, "Hey, you want to see this show, Jesse?" And I was like, "Oh, we'll pop on the first episode." We watched all six episodes.
Yeah, well, it's a British show. There's not
just in a row. Yeah, it's not like there's a lot going on.
It
anyway,
tight, yeah.
Long story short, Clem Fandango is a hilarious character. Nobody who hasn't seen Toast of London is going to understand any of this, but. Go check it out. I don't know where you can find it right now, but I'm sure you can find it somewhere. It's well worth giving a look-see, especially if you want to see Ash Tyler in a very different role than you're used to him.
An agent of control from the future?
Because it is really funny to see me like, oh, Ash Tyler. I'm a Starfleet officer.
To back you up, Patrick, when the Lower Decks episode, I think it's Parth Ferengi's Heart Place, came out.
Yeah.
I was laughing reading the title, and my wife goes, oh, what's funny? And I was like, oh, it's a reference to this thing. And she's like, okay, what's that thing? And I was like, oh, it's great. You'd love it. And then I paused and was like, actually, I don't know if you would love it. It's kind of like, you know how like when The Office came to America, and she's like, just show me the intro. And I showed it to her. She's like, looked at me like she had no idea who I was. And I was like,
she's like, what are you showing?
All right,
what is this?
We don't have to watch it. It's okay. Never mind.
It's
only possible.
I didn't like Ash Tyler the first time that I saw Discovery. I was like, I can't dig on this character. And I've definitely softened on him on rewatching the season.
Well, his arc is just his arc is bananas.
It's a weird arc.
It really is. It's very, very wacky.
Yeah.
But once you understand the whole arc, you kind of come to appreciate what he is playing to more, I think, because it's got to be difficult to do what he's doing. Yeah. Like, it's so weird.
They also did that thing in the first season where before Ash's true identity as Valk was revealed, they didn't even use his name for Valk. They used he used his father's name. So they actually disguised the fact that he was playing two characters by using a separate name, which is very unusual. You have to like sign all sorts of special forms and stuff to do that with the SAG SAG union and all that. So yeah, I'm with you there, Jesse, because like I was kind of like, what exactly is going on here? And what I still don't know with that character is how much of that arc was thought about ahead of time. Certainly a certain amount must have been, because like I said, they, you know, disguise some names and stuff. But I don't know. It's not clear to me that it was entirely coherent all the way through. But Shazid Latif, he's a good actor. He's a charming person, so he was able to, you know, carry you through some of the scenes that they're just talking a bunch of nonsense. You're just like, okay, I guess they're just talking nonsense at each other, but it's kind of cool, you know. I guess something's gonna happen. And in this particular episode, once he grows a beard and he's done all, you know, he's got all this involvement with Laurel and all that, it becomes a little bit more interesting, because at least there's, you know, if you have enough plot line, at least there's something you can think about, right?
Laurel's always cool because she just always sounds so strange.
Right? Yeah.
The weirdest voice.
I love Laurel.
Yeah, me too.
She is one of my favorite Klingons ever. Totally. She is played by Mary Chifo, who is the daughter of the Sparkle Motion lady Donnie Darko.
Her.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I mean, I knew Mary Chifo was awesome just from watching her act.
Sparkle Motion.
And seeing her in interviews, too. And by the way, apparently Kenneth Mitchell...
I'm starting to question your dedication to Sparkle Motion.
We talked earlier about Kenneth Mitchell and how he was diagnosed with ALS, and it turns out that Mary Chifo was the first person he told on the crew, or on the cast and crew, when he found out, and she helped him figure out how to announce it to the production team, you know what the best way to do that was. So she's clearly very well respected by her colleagues, and she has all this presence. And again, that's what works, is when you see her and Ash, Tyler, and Pike all in a room. They're all these like pretty strong personalities, particularly Laurel and Pike, but they are able to, you know, they're simpatico, right? They can stand up to each other, and no one's stealing the spotlight.
It's really impressive. This episode, I mean, just this single episode, it kind of made me realize like how dedicated Discovery was to being, you know, really playing in the Star Trek sandbox. Like, here's an exterior shot of a planet and a moon, and here's an exterior shot of a ship, and it's moving around. Like, there's so much Star Trek in this, and it really, especially on a rewatch, it really hits you like, oh yeah, this is Star Trek to its core. And I, you know, not to bring up those whiners again, but the whiners are always like, it's not Star Trek. Yeah. It's not real Star Trek. I'm like, dude, all the pieces are there.
Oh yeah.
They just also have time crystals. Like, and relax.
I liked Discovery right from the beginning. However, you know, lots of critiques here and there, particularly, you know, you mentioned earlier, Jesse, the whole exposition thing. We talked about when we talk about the pilot, a lot of people love the pilot, the first episode, the Vulcan Hello. And I like a lot about it, but there are scenes in there where I'm like, this is so aggravating that they're just standing here for 2 minutes, just talking at each other to explain the plot. And they're not showing us the plot, and everything they're talking about sounds great, but they should be showing, you know. So there have been issues here and there, and some pacing and changing of showrunners and all this other stuff, but overall it's been very, very entertaining, and they've done a good job with it. But the Star Trek stuff, like when you go back and look at it now, it just feels like a part of it, right? Like all this stuff that when you're watching a new series, and especially after there's like a 14-year break in Star Trek and your brain's all trying to process it, you go back and you're like, oh yeah, no, this is all lore that I'm familiar with, and it's important for the rest of the story.
Although they were in a cargo bay at one point, and I saw some like hover drones that looked like they were transporting cargo or something, because it's in a cargo bay.
Yeah,
but I don't think those were dots. I think those were dots. I just don't remember.
They may not have been.
Can you tell the difference between dots and human beings?
Maybe they were dots.
Could have just been some guys.
Is there a term for like that kind of like when you don't
human blindness? Do you have human blindness?
Right, whatever.
I believe there is a horrific neurological disorder. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what it's called, but where you do think people are robots, where you think everyone's some sort of like shadowy shell.
Terrible.
Yeah,
That sounds like a trip you never came down from or something.
Please don't say like that.
No, that's the way it ends.
Making me think of that movie Jacob's Ladder, which is a really upsetting really upsetting movie.
Real quick about the time crystals. I don't know why I thought
time crystals.
So there's obviously time.
Do we have time to talk about the time crystals?
There's obviously time travel outside of this series of episodes and Discovery.
You can go around the
sun. You go around the sun a bunch of times, right? But I was thinking like, well, why do they need time crystals if they can go around the sun? And then I was just like, well,
you can
time
use
crystals,
the Guardian of Forever.
The time crystals offer you more power than like, you know, just traveling around the sun. You can like look in the future. You don't have to go there.
You can lock in your future.
Sometimes
you can lock in your horrific.
Sometimes you want to be able to see to the future without having to go there. And if you fling yourself around the sun and travel, you're there, you know, it's a pain in the ass to get back. So time crystals are just like it's like traveling through time with more features, you know, so that's why we need the time crystals. What other time things have there been? Like,
well, Q,
first class
Q. Yeah, Q sends people.
Well, Q is better than a time crystal because he can do whatever
he wants.
What
about like the Guardian of Forever?
Yeah, Guardian Forever is a good one.
Now, here's another thing. Is a lot of people were bumming on the name Time Crystal. I'm like, really? Because
it's a real
arguably name. The best Star Trek series ever, Deep Space Nine, had the Time Orb.
Yes, the Time Orb.
And they used that to set up the Tribble episode. Like,
that's the thing about Deep Space Nine is what's great is Deep Space Nine definitely, you know, the more the sort of real politic.
The Time Crystals.
Realistic in a lot of ways. But yeah, the core plot hinged on wormhole aliens and magic orbs that for some reason had characteristics of time or emotion or whatever. So, yeah.
Time will tell.
Time.
It's pretty good. You could almost hear Tenevik say, get it, at the end of that line.
They turn around for a second look. I like the special effects on that plant that grew all fast when they were in that kind of reminded me of like some kind of I'll just think of like the first name that comes to mind, something that Guillermo del Toro or something would have. It like had this surreal look to it. That was pretty cool. I'm wondering what those weapons were. They weren't Bat'leths, but when Pike entered and then he was surrounded by those two guards and they had these like blade
they were
weapons.
Pretty cool, yeah.
They weren't Bat'leths, but I'm wondering if they had a name.
They were new Bat'leths.
New.
Oh, right. Bat'leths.
I thought everything about Boreth, other than the CGI goofy Pike at the beginning, all of it looked great. The production design was great. Walking around, I mean, you really felt like you were in some sort of cool Klingon. Especially the winter aspect, right? Because
I thought that was ash, like flying down from a volcano.
Maybe it was. It looked like snow though. It had the effect of like a Japanese village.
The thing is, I couldn't tell if it was snow or ash. But like, yeah,
Pike had the winter.
Yes.
Regular Starfleet pants. So I was like, are those pants better than the shirts? Because should you not also need winter pants?
That was a pretty sexy winter jacket.
I guess that's why his hood was down when he was climbing the stairs because he was all close to the lava.
Yeah.
And then
the lava.
And then like
it's
when he,
lava.
Lava. Yeah. When he crossed the bridge, he was more in the winter zone, so he had to like put up his that's evidence that it was cold enough.
That's like a tailored jacket, which you don't see tailored winter jackets where it went in, you know, it was like it accentuated his broad shoulders went in and then flared out a little on his hips, just a hint of
You also don't see too many Star Trek planets with more than one biome.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool.
For real, yeah.
Yeah, no, I thought it was really exciting. And as you were saying earlier, Jesse, they really went all out in this episode with all the outdoor, you know, the ship scenes and stuff. It was something we actually complained about a little bit in the fifth season, which seemed like it was budgetary restrictions or something, that they were saving their budget for certain things. There was a lot of wonderful visual stuff in the fifth season of Discovery, but there were also way fewer like ship shots and, you know, flying, you know, things like that. This had so many of them, and one that I wanted to call out specifically was the weird shot where Burnham and Spock's shuttle leaves the shuttle bay, where the shot was as if the camera was like bolted to the right nacelle, and it just follows out the shuttle bay, and then you see the ship. It was a peculiar but really interesting shot, and it reminded me that particularly early on, but all throughout the series, Discovery sort of made a name for itself by doing like weird shots. You know, sometimes they were aggravating because it was like too spinny or too upside down or whatever, but they were trying, and I thought it was really fun how they would do that. And this was just that was the one really good example here where you're like, whoa, it's sort of disorienting, but in a good way. And most importantly, you know the geography. It like helped you help define, yeah. Like you're like, I know exactly where everything is, and this is giving me information as to what's going on.
I was a little confused as to why they went out there, because what they said was, they said the ship checked in 10 minutes past the hour.
Yes.
So it had already checked in. So why
but
did
10 minutes past the hour.
But 10 minutes past the hour, but it still checked in. So
but
it, why
but
did
10 minutes past
but
the
why
hour.
It, they would check on it if it hadn't checked in at all. So once it checked in, even though it's late, they would get a stern talking
it's
to.
Suspicious.
But why did they need to go out there?
It's suspicious.
But then how did it check in at all with all those dead bodies everywhere? Like, wouldn't they have noticed that?
Control had taken over.
Because Gant was available as a
meat puppet.
Terrifying homunculus.
I understand like the logistics of how it happened. I was just confused as to how they knew something was up.
They were suspicious. Burnham was suspicious. They were going to
investigate. Did they check in with Control? No, they checked in with Discovery or whatever.
Ash was suspicious, yeah. I think.
And they didn't.
And they knew that he would, you know, communicate that to Burnham.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a trap.
Yeah. So it was a trap. Okay, yeah. So we're going to go with that.
The whole idea was get them concerned. They know that they're trying to, you know.
To distract them.
Yeah. And the thing to remind folks.
They are all Section 31 ships.
Yeah, that I think they, you know, they do a pretty good job of explaining in the behind the scenes, or not behind the scenes, in the last time on. But the whole thing with the second season was that Discovery got fused with that sphere data. Mm-hmm. That sphere data, we're told, if Control gets its hands on it, then it takes over the universe and turns the universe into like a nanite slurry or something like that. So whatever happens, they can't let Control get a hold of Discovery and the sphere data.
I like how Burnham was getting really impatient with the signals. Like early in the episode, she goes like, I'm asserting that waiting around for these signals to provide us with the answers has proven to be a colossal waste of time. And then later on, Spock's like, I understand your need to pursue Leland, but you must not dismiss the importance of the signals in defeating Control. And she goes, how have the signals done anything to protect us against Control so far? So she's about had it up to here with these damn signals.
For the audience at home, Dan has placed his hand. Could you do that again, Dan? Just sorry. Is it above your head or
just above?
Forehead.
Just above. Is it like above your hairline or just above your head?
No, it's that's how up to here it is. It's above my hair.
It's above his. And Dan has a pretty strong hairline. So
thank you.
All right, well,
it's no Captain Pike.
No. I would never even.
I gotta be real.
No.
I
agree with you.
How many people pull that off? Right?
Well, I'm glad you're being honest. Otherwise, I wouldn't believe any compliments you threw.
See, that's why I do it. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about that, Dan, is that she's kind of trying to make the opposite case that Pike uses, where he's like, I don't think this is a trap, because otherwise, why did they have us help the people on Terra Elysium? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm choosing to believe all the good things about this, right? Mm-hmm. It really is a dense episode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's impressive, you know, in retrospect, mm-hmm. how quickly it moves along and does what it needs to do.
And speaking of moving along and doing what we need to do, do you know what we need to do, Dan?
Do we need to like
do 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 do
what Jesse said?
Well, I don't. Well, I can't speak for you, or I can only speak for myself. I don't need to do do, and I don't know what Jesse, or you think. But we do need to take a break.
Okay,
is that okay?
Yeah.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and when we get back, we will conclude our discussion of Through the Valley of Shadows.
Oh.
Be right back.
Hangnail.
Okay, we are back. We have returned from our break, and now we're ready to finish our conversation about this television show.
Humans.
You have 30 minutes.
We touched on this a little bit, but the whole time crystal thing is it's sort of a standard monkey paw story, right? But it is really well performed. It's fun, it's well performed. This is the storyline that's the more interesting of the two. I'm still engaged with the other story, with the Control story, just because it's like, oh, it's so complicated, it must be interesting. But this one is the opposite, in that it's a very simple story. It's fairly trite in a lot of ways, but because it's Anson Mount, because it's Kenneth Mitchell, and just the way they put it all together, for me, it works really well.
I'm not joking, Lee.
Yeah, I know you're not joking.
There was another point that I was a little bit confused about, when Gant, after like Burnham, the point in which Burnham figured out that Gant was not really Gant,
uh-huh.
He goes, after the Battle of the Binaries, doubt was all I had. Section 31 accelerated mm-hmm. their threat assessment program to prevent war from ever even starting. Mm-hmm. Sounded like a good idea to me. A way to guarantee a safer future. It might sound impossible, but with control, it's not an impossibility. So she looked up after he said, a way to guarantee a safer future, as if that was the line that set off an alert in her
head. I thought it was the line after that.
That's what I thought too.
It's possible.
No, no. And I watched it a couple of times. The line after that, she starts that. Then when she really starts acting, but she looks up all like suspiciously when he says a way to guarantee a safer future.
Yeah.
And so I was a little bit like, that was one line too soon. I felt
what I don't recall is whether I do remember that the whole deal with control. Is it was some sort of offshoot of it was kind of like the Tony Stark business.
Mm-hmm.
You try to save the world and the thing you create ends up like destroying the world, kind of thing.
Yeah,
Ultron business. Mm-hmm.
You aren't in pain.
So what I don't recall if a similar phrase was used to describe sort of the ultimate goal of control. So it could be that was referencing that, but if it was, it's lost on me here jumping into it. And it also shows one of the drawbacks. There's lots of pluses to serialized storytelling, but there's also some drawbacks, which is if you're relying on certain emotional cues based off of an obscure reference from earlier in the season, maybe it's not going to hit as
well. One of the things that, one of the things that makes me agree with you there, Dan, is that if you think about it, that's the exact same mission that Burnham is on.
Mm-hmm.
Guarantee a safer future.
Right.
Like, that's what she's there to do. So I think you're right that it felt like it was maybe one line too early. And also, like, come on, Burnham, be more surreptitious. Like, reach for the phaser as you're looking up instead of doing that and then reaching for dramatic. The phaser. Like,
yeah, I mean, the way to a way to save her future, like, everyone is pretty into that. It's just what you say after that to implement that idea is can be problematic.
Right.
Yeah,
pretty much everyone offers a safer future.
Yeah.
That's the problem, right? Mm-hmm. In general.
But here's the thing that I think, you know, because I don't frequently on Open Pike Night, I play the role of the wide-eyed, glossy-eyed fanboy who's like, I love everything about every Star Trek, which is mostly true. But this guy, Gant, once he's taken over and, you know, even with the goofy robot voice,
yeah.
I think he's a better villain than Leland,
who
is like way too arch all the time.
Yeah. Way too arch. And also there's something about Leland that, I don't know, it's hard to describe, but like you kind of want to just hang out with him. And even when you know he's a bad guy, you're like, I don't know, he seems, you know. He's kind of a rascal. Whereas Gant, he was like, really, like, fuck, this guy he's scary. He's doing some Terminator shit.
Dude, he chokeslam Burnham.
Yeah. Yeah.
It hurts like a bitch.
I will say that for my money, as much as I like most of the production design in this episode, and as much as I like the concept of the nanites spilling out of his open wounds, it was, I don't know. I don't know that they pulled it off very
well. And I wasn't very clear on their way they trapped.
It was all snaky and bloopy, and I was like, ooh, we're scary nanites.
And way they trapped him was a little bit like, kind of like, huh? I guess it was, we'll create a dummy startup system, something large and unaffected. Yeah. The AI will be drawn to the dummy startup system. It'll enter the dummy system like a lion drawn to fresh meat, and then we'll close the door behind it, trapping it in a cage. I mean, it's all conceptual, obviously, and it's supposed to not, you shouldn't have to deep, it's techno babble without the techno, really.
But we know that there are audio recorders on starships in Star Trek, because captain's logs are always getting made, right? So if control has control over this ship, wouldn't it be listening to everything that they're saying all of the effing time?
Right. Like, one would presume.
I mean, we're already doing that now.
Well,
so.
And the thing I was thinking about while watching this is that on the one hand, it was a scary scene, and it was like, oh, this is intense, and it's scary to see somebody you knew about and worked with, and all of a sudden they're possessed. It's sort of that classic sort of possession thing. Another, you know, hearkening back to relying on tropes from older stories to instill some fear in us. And it worked. But I was sitting there thinking, I was like, you know what would be a lot scarier is if this whole control business didn't have Leland, didn't have this guy. If it was just the machines. If it was like that X-Files episode Blood, I think it is, where it's just the machines are using whatever they're limited, but whatever access they do have, they'll fuck with you, you know, by closing the door on you or chopping your hand up in the, you know, the blender or something like that.
Classic.
Yeah, exactly. That to me would, if Control just controlled all the computer bits in the machines, but wasn't able to possess people, I think that might be a more interesting and more scary story, because you can't trust the thing you're trained as a fan to love, which is the ship.
Which is the computer.
You know, the ship is your home. The computer is your friend, and it takes care of you, and it replicates food and makes you mac and cheese, and it beams your poop out of your belly so you don't ever have to poop.
Yeah.
Because that's what has to happen in Star Trek. They can beam out babies and they can beam out poops.
Yep, they can.
Both. Well, and they end up relying on the same thing for multiple characters, right? We've got Gant, we've got Leland. A similar thing happens to Miriam, although or Arium, I think.
Arium,
but it makes a little better sense with Arium, at least, because it's like she's part robot.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly. Yeah.
So but you're right. It ends up getting repeated enough to where you're like, oh, okay.
And what
we could tell that how much in control they were. The ship had all the orange dots, and the humans had. Yeah. It was like when they showed us all the things that were under control. Dots, there were 34 orange blocks, boxes, and then there was one blue box. The one blue box represented what the humans had control.
Yeah.
So the machine.
It's like
their
name should be Control.
They had 34 times the amount of control. Yeah, Control. It's
on
the same
other hand, on the other hand, so those were all apparently Section 31 ships, and somebody, I forget who it was, Reese or somebody, but somebody mentions like, oh, that's almost their whole fleet. No, I guess Ash said that, and it was like, okay, that's not like a lot of ships. I guess it's a lot.
One variable it cannot account for.
It's a lot of ships if you're talking about sort of contemporary, naval fleets or something. Yeah, but I don't know.
It was funny. Yeah. Because he goes, those are Section 31 ships. And Saru goes, there are 30 of them. And somebody goes, that's almost their whole fleet. I'm like, does it have 31?
It's got 31. That's exactly
right. A little on the nose. Like,
oh, I didn't even guess that. That's hilarious.
They are all Section 31 ships.
Well, and just to back up, I think one complaint I agreed with, even though I was willing to go along with it for this season, because, you know, the season was fun, season two. But the idea of Section 31, the way they represented it as more people knowing about it, undercuts it a little bit. Them having all these ships explicitly sort of undercuts it, as opposed to how they were presented in Deep Space Nine, where it was more about, no, they're just scuttling around, you know, little wormy people manipulating existing levers of power, which might include ships, etc., but not necessarily their own whole starships. It sort of changes the dynamic of how you think of them. And of course, then they sort of then it goes away. So it's like after this season, it's like, okay, that's that version of Section 31 is done. Now they're going underground. They sort of provided a little bit of a justification, but I can kind of agree with the critique that you didn't have to use Section 31. You could have done this with just regular old Starfleet, and it still would have been scary.
No,
and they tried to lampshade it by having, I don't remember if it was season one or season two, but one character is like, have you ever seen a black badge?
Yes.
And they're like, oh yeah, it's a Section 31 badge. And they're like, so if you're not supposed to exist, shouldn't you not have your own badge that announces that you exist?
And especially it's like, a badge that looks so awesome.
The hell was that?
You put that in there, but it doesn't fix anything.
It's like when you're like Nova Squadron or whatever. It's like, those guys look awesome. They got that awesome uniform. It's like, that's not a secret. It's not like a secret society.
Yeah. And I will say, one of the common complaints with Discovery is, we don't know the crew. And it's like, well, you don't hear their names a lot, right? But we get some great crew life in this episode.
Yeah.
Like watching Owo and Detmer fall in love across the lunch table just made me so much angrier at season five. You know, also this moment of Reno playing kind of a proto Hemmer role, right? Yeah. Like, I'm going to fix what's broken in people as an engineer.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be grumpy while I do it.
Yeah, I got that in my notes. Reno's
totally works.
I need medical attention.
Reno is good at fixing things and people.
Yeah. Don't screw it up.
And I love how we know she's doing it because she cares, but she's also in a position to act as if she's only doing it because it's inconvenient to her to have these two people fighting, right?
It hurts like a bitch.
Culver and Stamets is just aggravating her, so she's like, I'll just cure their relationship by because otherwise Stamets is going to be no good to me. But you know, I'm just again reminded about how what a wonderful character Reno is, and this is early Reno.
So I know this was a joke, but do you think non-denominational shuttle parking is like people who aren't affiliated with some kind of like a Starfleet? Like, what the fuck does non-denominational
I think it was bullshit.
Like, it's got to mean... I know it was a joke, but it doesn't mean... wasn't meant to mean anything. Like, so maybe it's just people. It's like, when you come, it's like, I'm from this faction of Starfleet, and the other person's like, I'm from this faction of Starfleet, and then these people are like, I'm from my own faction, which is no faction, and so that's where non-denominational shuttle parking is.
I mean, that's as good a theory as any.
Sure.
I think regular listeners to the show know that Dan is from his own faction.
It's the Iborg fashion. Yeah. You haven't brought up genocide yet.
Not yet.
He also said that her wife wanted fewer than 10 guests. Yes. So it's like, how many denominations are going to be represented among nine people?
And how many shuttles? You know, I mean, that's a max of 10, and that sounds unreasonable. You expect some people to shuttle pool, you know, or to take a Uber shuttle or whatever the equivalent is in the in Starfleet in the future.
I'm an engineer, not a poet.
Well, that's for sure.
And Patrick, you had mentioned earlier, and I don't remember if this was actually, you know, quote, on air, unquote, but the opposite of love is indifference. We actually get to see that in this episode because Stamets is sitting at the lunch table, like just looking at Hugh, not care that he's in the same room. And he goes and sits with his new friends and he's just so upset about it. And it's like,
Hugh is having so much fun.
It's very subtle, but it absolutely works.
It is. And it's, you know, we're lucky that Discovery, unlike a lot of other streaming shows, Discovery got to go on for 5 seasons. It's too bad it got sort of ended after 5 seasons. I think they were expecting to maybe at least get one more season out of it. But since it went on for 5 seasons, we got to really enjoy a number of great character arcs. But the Culber Stamets one is a fantastic one and very realistic. And that's what makes it interesting to watch. Right. You know,
I mean, Culber was having a relationship crisis because he came back from the dead.
Yeah. And it's a funny, goofy sci-fi reason. Mm-hmm. But it's also it's got aspects in there where it's like you've had a life event that has impacted you. And that's now true. It makes you confused as to what your status is with your loved ones, right?
That's what I experienced is for me alone.
That's something somebody can identify with, and making it as ridiculous and sci-fi as he died because of some mold business or whatever, you know, like it's like, okay, it's distant enough from my own, whatever my own personal issue is, that I don't have to compare it directly to it, but I can still be influenced by it. That's good Star Trek, right? Mm. That's like what Star Trek does when it's at its best, uses some sort of sci-fi or fantasy analogy to create space for people to think about things that they might be uncomfortable thinking about otherwise. This was cool. This is a cool part of the episode. Of course, again, like we said at the beginning, this is a super dense episode because it's the Culber Stamets stuff. It's the Laurel Tenevec, son of none, you know, Ash Tyler stuff. It's the Pike stuff. It's the Spock stuff. You know, we even get to see Spock's mom at one point.
Amanda Grayson.
Mm-hmm. All right. Since Pike sees his future, he must be pretty sure they end up winning. Why didn't he make that point? Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that.
That's interesting.
They're like,
he uses it in Strange New Worlds.
Yeah, and the thing is, he knew. Yeah, because in Strange New Worlds, they actually make that a plot point. But here they don't yet, because their whole thing is they're worried about whether or not they're going to win against Control. And he's now not only seen a future where he is a higher rank and in a different position and looks older, so clearly some time has passed. It doesn't guarantee that they defeated Control, but hey, it's a good sign that he's going to live a lot longer. Yeah. And he's taken the time crystal, which apparently guarantees that future is definitely going to happen. So he should have gone back and be like, hey, no, whatever. Hey, just decide what to do, because whatever we decide to do, it's the right thing to do. It must be, because I've locked in this future.
I have real life plot armor now. We should use it.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of armor, I for whatever reason, and I'm sure this is not the origin, but their armor reminded me, once again, I haven't mentioned Mass Effect in a while, but for some reason, their space armor was reminding me of something from Mass Effect, which probably is from something else.
Are you talking about like Burnham
they're
and
white,
Spock?
They're Burnham and Spock, yeah, they're white
with their,
armor.
With the, yeah, the stuff.
Space Marine.
Yeah. Well, and those Season 5 future Admiral uniforms are straight Mass Effect uniforms.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was counting, actually, speaking of season five, I was counting the amount of, because I noticed I didn't have that many Burnham quotes this week. And then
you were doing the fast Burnham game.
Yeah, I was. And
recording
so,
the fast
because,
Burnham stuff.
Because in the last season, there was like an overwhelming amount of Burnham. Like that, and I'm not saying that's not a negative. I'm just saying there was it was a ton of Burnham.
A lot
stuff.
Of Burnham and a lot of fast Burnham.
A lot of fast Burnham. So and so in this episode, there was only a few Burnhams. And I only managed to notice two that I think would qualify as a fast-talking Burnham, and maybe in a one bonus. So these are the two.
So maybe there's still a chance to stop it. Maybe there is something in the signals that can help us finish what my mom started.
Those are fast Burnhams.
Fast-talking Burnham back then. And then here's the bonus.
Send a priority one message on a secure channel to Enterprise's XO.
Fast-talking Pike.
Fast-talking
Pike. They had clearly not decided that Una's name would be Una yet,
yes,
right?
Like. Yeah. Yeah.
Why would he say it that way? Yeah. Like, send a message to Enterprise's XO. Like, dude, you know who that person is. You don't have to use their title. You just say their name.
I thought she was dead.
Any other major points as we sort of wind things down? We talked about Jet Reno, not Janet Reno.
No.
We did discuss the game they were playing, and Jesse, you noted the character development.
Hey, Bamboo Boy.
Which I love seeing scenes like that, and they ebbed and flowed. Discovery did do them from time to time, but that's true of most Star Treks. A lot of Star Treks did not always have time for these types of scenes, and so I thought it was really enjoyable to watch. I like watching the crew socialize, and so anytime there's an opportunity, and especially, which I think is even more rare, is watching the team socialize in a way that's really not directly related to the plot, right? So this was just, they were setting up the Stamets and Culber thing, but getting a little fun in the character development in the process, which I really enjoyed.
I don't have any other major points, but I do have an odd slash end. So I'll say that.
I think we're ready for odds and ends because we got a couple here. Mm-hmm. I'll start and then we'll go to you, Jesse. One thing that I noticed was there was all those dead bodies floating around.
Dead bodies everywhere.
Dead bodies floating around in space, which was cool and scary and all that. That CGI was good, right? Because I guess it's easier to make a dead, frozen, mangled body than Captain Pike walking up some stairs. But at one point, and it's just an optical illusion, but at one point it looked like the way they positioned one of the floating dead bodies, it looked like it was somebody just sitting on the nacelle of the Section 31 ship. when they were on board it, and I briefly was like, oh my god, is this a plot point? Is this going to be like, is that the Red Angel? Is that somebody just waiting? What's going on there? But then I watched it back through a couple times. I was like, okay, now it's just one of the dead bodies that happens to be floating in that position.
How are you possible?
All right, Jesse, what's your odd and end?
So I have another one that's really small, and I may not even bring it up. But did you notice in Pike's terrifying vision of the future, one of the Starfleet cadets behind glass is wearing that big square cadet badge that we also see on Uhura in the first season of Strange New Worlds?
I did not notice that.
What is it?
It's huge. It's a giant square.
Well, like, spotted. Well, you got to be for those trainees, you know? You got to make it very clear that there's a trainee.
The other one is just like, did they have maybe a backup boom mic operator in this episode? Because there were a few scenes where I was like, this is not crispy audio.
I agree. And speaking about Laurel, right? It wasn't just that, like, so Laurel has a certain way of speaking, but it was inconsistent, where sometimes it was just the normal Laurel speak, which is, it's a unique enough presentation. But other times it was just like, it really sounded like, The teeth were falling out, the false teeth were falling out of her mouth or something. I don't know what it was, but I don't know if I was the only one who caught that.
I forbid you to go.
Yeah, that maybe was
that.
We will not have this conversation in the presence of Captain Pike.
Right.
That and Saru, when he's telling Michael, like, yeah, go ahead, go on your mission. And I was like, he sounds so muffled. And usually Saru is like the king of enunciation.
Yeah. I agree. Although what was, it was confident Saru, right? And this is newly confident Saru, because it's not too many episodes before that he went through Kelpian puberty and got his spikes.
That is a good name.
And decided to be all tough guy Saru.
Two truths are possible.
It was another aspect that was a little bit peculiar, needed getting some adjusting to just in retrospect, because again, we've been living in the last three seasons where Michael Burnham becomes the captain and Saru becomes her first officer, or in other ways is also sort of subordinate.
Oh, right. Yeah. And well, that's interesting.
And it's the reverse
here. Yeah. I had to remind myself that, yeah, she was his subordinate and they hadn't gotten quite as close yet, but they were starting to chum up together.
But again, her character development, her arc over the series is it's a significant arc, and she's very clearly, this is season two Burnham, right? She is a little bit more aggressive, a little bit less suffering of fools, that sort of thing. She doesn't have
quite, I don't need saving, brother.
She hasn't developed some of the wisdom that she gets through going through this plot and the subsequent plots where she, you know, she learns a few things along the way.
Jumps into the future.
Speaking of what was the word you used? Optical illusions. That's that phrase or term.
I think I used that quite a long time ago.
Actually, you about 5 minutes ago.
I don't know. I think
that was your first fun. That was your first nook and cranny. Was you were talking about optical illusion because of a dead crewman on a ship.
Okay.
So.
All right.
Did Laurel look like she had four nostrils to you? It looked like she had four nostrils to me.
She had interesting teeth. Yeah. She's got. Yeah. They gave the new Klingon some interesting teeth patterns.
I thought
you could also almost see like where the prosthetic was applied.
Right.
It was a little intense.
And Spock had like a pointy beard, cheek beard going on, like his ears or something. It was weird. It was a weird decision for his.
I was a little more comfortable with the Spock beard this time than when I was first watching through it. I remember being a little like, I don't know. I like Ethan Peck as Spock.
No, it's definitely not a criticism on anything. It was just kind of like interesting choice for his beard.
Well, and I was a little distracted staring at it because I was like, okay, is that natural or is that shaved that way, or do they shave it that way on Ethan Peck because they want it to be like that's natural on Spock? I don't know.
Could not tell. Like
I stared at it for a while. I couldn't figure it out.
It's so borderline. But they do. I think in this season, somebody calls it out. He's like, "Do you have any questions?" And somebody goes, "Yeah. Do you really think the beard is working?"
yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, but the whole time on the planet, the
time. Did you say time? Are you talking about time crystals?
The whole monk
time. Will tell.
The whole monk time.
Hindsight is 2020.
The whole monk, get it? The whole monk time planet. That was it was fun. That was a fun. It was fun to look at. It was fun to experience.
Totally, yeah.
You know. Just
I've
like
been watching
all,
Monk.
Like a lot of good eye candy.
I've been watching Monk lately. You know. Remember Monk on
God,
USA?
Here we go.
I think it was on Netflix.
I guess that means
there?
We're done.
No, no, we're not done.
Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah, with Tony Shalhoub. Monk, you know, his wife got blown up.
He's quirky, right?
He's quirky. It was a good show because it was weird. It was sort of slightly comedic, but then there was all this horrific stuff happened. Not just
eat your protein.
Not just the plot setup where
it was uncalled for.
Monk's wife is horrifically blown up in a car bomb.
But it was so much worse.
But there'd be these whimsical murders, but it would be like somebody getting like chainsawed to death.
Don't screw it up.
All right, back to
the
original
programming. I do want listeners to know the look on Dan's face when Patrick said Monk and Dan said, "All right, I think we're done." It was like it's like a parent trying to get their kid to leave the fair or something.
Oh, usually the best look is when Jesse is like crinkling some snacks or something and Dan darts him like an evil look.
Well, I just thought I'd like just express like, you know,
no,
something I
good.
Liked about the episode cuz yeah, you know, just
good.
Cuz we're having fun and everything,
we're
but I just
want
to express that there was some
you know, I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked
it. Not that people should give a shit about my opinion, but like I'm saying.
I agree.
Nor are you.
In wholehearted agreement. Any other odds and ends? I don't have.
We could create a dummy startup system.
Oh, the one thing is, I mean, I don't know if it's even worth mentioning, but there is a point where there's some super ADR, you know, where they record over. It's where Ash is talking to Laurel, and it's a scene where they're just standing there not talking. You see the back of Ash's head, and very clearly they went back and recorded. We never even gave him a name. And it's so like, look, you sometimes you notice these things and it's like, okay, they decided they needed to give some more information to the audience, but it's funny when it's so forcefully shoved in there when it was clearly what they shot. It just doesn't make any sense. And they're just like, we have to get this information out that they did not give Tenevic a name because later they're going to learn his name and they're going to be all like, whoa. So, you know, they have to explain that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, just, you know, some to point out.
When Laurel said to Ash, she was like, I have accepted the truth about us. You are and will always be in love with Michael Burnham. I was in love with Vogue?
Yeah.
Who sacrificed everything. And then she goes, but that is not who you are. She just told him he's a piece of shit, basically.
No, she did not.
Yeah, she did. She's like, that's not you.
No, she's helping him. She's helping him.
What she said is
letting him out of the.
No, she said Vogue sacrificed everything and was really noble and brave and awesome. But that's not you. That's what she said. I'm not putting these words in her mouth.
I get how you're interpreting.
I mean, I'm putting some of the words in her mouth, but I'm just.
I get how you're interpreting this, but
you're summarizing.
I believe you're willfully misinterpreting this.
Willfully,
Vogue or Ash Tyler is worried because, as far as he's concerned, he's Ash Tyler with his implanted memories. But then he learns. Like, actually, he's this monstrous Klingon.
But then why did she add the part, like, everything? That's not you!
He's worried. He's been worried this season that he's a monster because of this thing that he went through. And she's giving him an excuse to no longer be worried about it by saying, you are not Vogue. Not saying you're a piece of shit.
Let's replace the words. I was in love with Vogue, who is very loving and gentle, but that's not who you are, you know?
Where you're coming from.
She starts it by saying, I recognize that you will always be in love with Michael Burnham, yes, as a way of alleviating the pressure on him.
Okay, like, no, that's a good point.
She's trying to say, like, it's cool. The subtext here is that she's found somebody else that she's hanging out with, and she's like, don't worry, dude, I'm good. I'm the chancellor of the Klingon Empire. I can do whatever.
When the future becomes the past, the present will be unlocked.
There was a lot of present, unlocked, future, past talk.
Yeah, well, you know.
Obviously, because of the time.
It'd be cool if he handed him a little gift box as he said that.
You hear a little what?
If he handed him a little gift box as he said that, the present will be unlocked.
And there's one of those annoying puzzle boxes that you can't open unless you smash it open.
The present is a veil between anticipation and horror. Lift the veil, and madness may follow.
I love those lines. I thought Tenevik was really fun.
Tenevik's great.
He seemed like such a not fun guy, but something about him was really fun.
It's also that's the type of line where if you analyze it at all, it doesn't really make any fucking sense. But it just sounds so crazy. You know,
the past, the present, the future. Intense. Are all equal in their presence.
All of them are equal. All right. I think that's enough of that. We've talked about that episode.
The Borgut do not leave these sacred walls. That of the Borgut.
All right. Well, okay. I'm glad you played that one.
Some more Klingon words.
This is the point of the show where Dan's like, I got a few extras. You got any others? Do you have any that you didn't play that you want to play before we go to the end bits?
I saw you back there.
How's that? Was that one worth waiting for?
I mean, I'm gonna leave that up to the audience.
You must see for yourself.
How about that? Was that exciting?
I mean,
this is one's always exciting, this subject matter.
They're coming for the data.
Red alert.
Red alert.
Red alert. All right.
I'm enraged.
I forbid you to go.
That was...
I love you both.
Choke on that.
Indeed we will. We will all metaphorically
double down on the espresso, kid.
Choke on that, Dan. That was Through the Valley of Shadows, episode 250 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. We've done a lot of episodes.
I'm a regular bloodhound.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, indeed. All right, so
hangnail.
So
hangnail.
Next,
hangnail.
Next
hangnail.
Next,
hangnail.
Jesus fucking Christ.
I feel so happy to have finally witnessed this in person, honestly.
Next week, we're all on vacation. We thought... Jesus. Okay. We thought, what better time than we are on vacation, so we had to record something ahead of time. So we thought, what a better time to record our second installment of our hit series, It's Not Star Trek.
No, it's not.
So, next week, we're not going to be talking about Star Trek. We will be discussing the first episode of the hit 1980s television program, ALF.
Ow!
Alien Life Form. Got any cat? Willie. Melmac.
Gayless.
All of that.
Dulampu.
All that. We already recorded it. It's a good episode.
Dulampu.
We already edited it. There's none of that. There's just mostly chasing the cat and the kid with the.
Before you get up for that final snack, I want you to know I'll be right back.
That wasn't in the first episode.
No, it wasn't. That was only to commercial breaks. Yeah. Back in the day when they had those little bumpers between commercial breaks, like between the show and the break, they had like the dude saying like, "Hey, don't lose your underpants. We're coming back," or whatever.
that's called Placate and Jesse. That's Jesse Placate. All right, but so next week we're going to talk about Alf. You can check it out. Everyone, go watch the first episode of Alf. You can see it in tons of places. It's even on YouTube, Amazon Prime. If you've got access to it, Tubi, it's free.
What is it?
You don't need an account. I watched it on Tubi, and it didn't even have any commercials. So if you need to find it, you should not have no trouble finding the very first episode of Alf. Watch that.
I'm enraged.
Rage is the enemy of logic.
Then listen to next week's episode. Then after that, we will get back to our regularly scheduled fun Star Trek-y business, and we'll just keep an eye on our social media, and we'll let you know what we will be discussing the following week. But
I gotta say, as a fan, I was kind of hoping that all of It's Not Star Trek would be food based, and that maybe the second one would be It's Got Mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise. Top. Nice pronunciation.
I agree. And
he knows what's up.
We'll do some more food stuff at some point. The tricky thing is that Jesse doesn't eat mayonnaise or eggs or what else.
But he does eat it in spoonfuls by itself.
No.
You know, nope.
No, not into that.
not at all.
He would be sort of an observer. He's very keen on observing it. I've been cooking up some eggs, and Jesse will be like looming over my shoulder. And I'm like, "What are you doing, man?" I was just like, "You want some eggs?" He's like, "Fuck no, I don't." He's just like watching the process.
We almost did a food
just
thing.
Checking it out.
But yeah, we'll do a food thing another time. But we wanted to talk about Alf, so we talked
pickles.
About
pickles.
And it's got the whole space thing.
Yeah, alien life form. Right? Yeah. There you go.
That's what you call Vulcans, really. Yeah. They're Alfs. bunch of Alfs.
So that's something to look forward to next week. In the meantime, thanks again, Jesse.
Thank you, Jesse.
For joining us.
My pleasure, gentlemen.
Open Pike Night. Go check it out. Premiere. It is the premiere. I was about to say Strange New Worlds podcast, but really it's one of the best Star Trek podcasts out there, even though their focus tends to be on Strange New Worlds. As for us, you can, of course, find us on social media, all the social media places at It's Got Star Trek. Website is itsgotstartrek.com. You can send us a message at itsgotstartrek.com/record. You can send us an email at feedback@itsgotstartrek. Feedback@itsgotstartrek.com, I should say. If you leave off the .com, it won't get to us. We're not Santa Claus. You can't just write North
Pole. Thanks, Agamus.
That's right. YouTube, Facebook, all that jazz. We're on all of that. All that jazz. And if you're interested in more of our coverage of Discovery, you can go to the website, go to itsgotstartrek.com. You can click on on the menu. There's all the series, they're all there. You click on one and it'll sort the podcast.
But don't get the tuna. It smells funny tonight when you click on that menu item. Because it's tuna's on the menu.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's actually a quote.
Is that a reference to something?
That's actually a quote.
That's a Weird Al lyric.
Yes, Jesse knows.
That's a problem.
Don't eat tuna. It smells funny tonight.
Okay. I know that song. Oh. I mean, I'm a Weird Al guy,
It's on the Rye or the Kaiser. Rye or the Kaiser. Instead of Eye of the Tiger.
Early. Nice. Yankovic. All right. So that will conclude our discussion for the evening. We look forward to talking at you about Alf next week. In the meantime, have a good one, and we'll see you later. Bye bye.
Good one.
He came back from the dead, and his name rhymes with poo.
No, I'll go. Right, Stephen. Maybe try a couple of the traditional readings again, where you emphasize the word mind and the word gap.
Yeah, all right. Are we rolling?
Hi, Stephen. This is Clem Fandango. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Clem Fandango.
So like the traditional delivery, Stephen, where you hit the word mind and the word gap.
Yeah, thanks for clearing that up, Clem.
All part of the service, Stephen.